You're listening to FM 90.1 KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Stay tuned for The Doctor's Inn.
I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, son, you look older than me, and I'm 71. You're falling apart, you're not living right. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said loud, you got to stop hanging out with that old in crowd. Living's a battle, and you're losing the fight. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, boy, your body is a temple. It's not a toy. Fill up this here paper cup and give it to the nurse. Don't spill it now. I went to the doctor. Doctor said, friend, this should be the middle, but it could be the end. You better get better, else you're gonna get worse. Oh, I went to the doctor. Oh, I went to the doctor. I went to the doctor, and the doctor said, sir, we got back the x-ray. Everything's a blur. But it's all positive. That's what every single test shows.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. I'm a family practitioner here in Chico, and The Doctor's Inn is a show from 6 to 7, the third Thursday of each month, where I bring up issues related to health and medicine, and hopefully they are subjects that are of interest to you, the listener. Speaking of you, the listener, this is Pledge Week to support this community radio where people like me can come on and talk to you about stuff that you might not hear otherwise. To make a pledge, the pledge phone number that KZFR here is 895-0131. It'd be great to show your support by pledging 895-0131. I want to tell you that the opinions voiced on this show do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. Speaking of underwriters, The Doctor's Inn is made possible by the generous contributions of you, the KZFR supporters, at 895-0131, and by Friends of the Arts, a state local partner to the California Arts Council. Since 2001, Friends of the Arts has been creating economic opportunity through arts and culture by producing community festival and events, including Artoberfest, Chico Paleo, the True North Tour, the Silent Film Festival, the NorCal Jazz Festival, the Salmon Festival, and more. To learn about Friends of the Arts, visit friendsoftheartsupstate.org. And by the Sierra Nevada Brewing Company, producers of fine beers and ales. Sierra Nevada also offers fine dining in their tap room and restaurant at 1075 East 20th Street in Chico. For more information, you can go on the internet to sierranevada.com. Thank you. Then today's show, we have with us my guest, Melody Yeager. She's an instructor at Chico State and Butte College in anthropology. Hello, Melody Yeager.
Hi, Ken. Thanks for having me back.
Sure. Melody Yeager has been on this show a couple times and in the recent past, and there are some subjects anthropologically relating to health and how we've developed the way we have, that she is going to finish getting into with us today. And I'm so glad she was able to come back. So, Melody Yeager, tell us where you're headed today on the show. Well, anthropologically.
Anthropologically and health-wise.
Yes.
Today, I wanted to finally get to, so this is our third time having a discussion, and we've talked about the evolution of the human body, the relationship with foods that we've consumed, overall health, and then on the last show, we were talking about newer foods that have been introduced into our diets and that impact on our bodies, which you know well, being a family practice physician. And I wanted to just kind of wrap up what some of those damages are or kind of review that and then really get today into talking about the human microbiome or the human microbiota, which is the group of organisms that live mostly in our guts and that are responsible for some really, really interesting health impacts that we're seeing.
And I hear you say that, and listeners, think about that. I want you to clue into what she's saying. She's talking about microbes. She's going to be talking about microbes. That is bacteria and fungi, possibly.
Viruses.
Parasitic organisms. And we all might hear that and go, ew. But she's going to tell us the real story.
So good guys.
Stay by your radios for this. Right. Okay. Let us listen.
So last time we were talking about changes in the American food industry and really the Western world industrialized food industry. And as our diets changed and as we went from just agriculture in the traditional sense, eating a lot of grains, which have lots of fiber and proteins, to really processing down those foods. We talked about what I call that trifecta of really terrible foods. We have sodium in really pharmacologic high doses. Excuse me.
Sodium meaning salt.
widely dispersed in our foods today, especially for flavor, which we kind of get used to. We talked about high fructose corn syrup, which is a sugar kind of mutant. It's derived from corn, and this comes from the fact that we have this huge abundance of corn right now in our country because of farm subsidies, and we needed to find things to do with this corn. So we break down the corn molecule, and we can up the fructose level in sugar. Sugar is usually 50% fructose, 50% glucose, but they bump it up, and it's 55% fructose and 45% glucose, and fructose is much sweeter than glucose. So with this high fructose corn syrup, it's liquid, it can go in anything, it tastes extra sweet, it's addictive, but it also is rapidly absorbed into our bloodstream. It triggers that lipogenesis, the storage of fats. Stop me anytime. also does the wearing down of that insulin response, which again, you know very, very well.
Insulin response because of the sugar that is in the high fructose corn syrup. That
right
response from your pancreas is needed and happens.
And that whole system starts to wear down over time, leading to type 2 diabetes, that developed metabolic disorder. So we have sodium, we have high fructose corn syrup, and then if that wasn't bad enough, we've started creating a new kind of fats that are shelf stable, and these are called trans fats or hydrogenated oils.
And shelf stable.
The companies
that make products that sell us in the stores want them to be able to last on the shelf
and be pretty and not make stains on napkins and things like that. So that's these trans fats, these hydrogenated, partially or fully hydrogenated oils, are shelf stable, as you said, and we're creating these foods that really aren't living. You know, and if we're consuming food for our own survival and we want to break down living organisms to feed our bodies, if we're consuming these kind of inert foods, and, you know, we could air quote that if we wanted to, you know, foods, put that in quotes, are we feeding our bodies or are we just putting calories in and calories out?
Yeah.
And that's the big question right now. So
kind of empty calories is kind of a term that comes off of that. You know, I just want to quickly go back to something you told us before about how we humans have developed in the over the thousands of years and the taste or the cravings that we've had because of the tough times in the ice ages and where we developed the taste there for salt and for sweet and for fat.
Right.
And how now those are, if we allow ourselves being drawn to those nowadays, can be detrimental in excess.
Absolutely.
And underline that word excess, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, these foods were never available in the amounts now, or these flavors, I should say, were never available in the amounts that they are now until the last 60 years.
Yeah.
You know, and you could even say 50 years. So when we're looking at tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, and if you want to go back even further, millions of years of evolution,
wow.
You know, the seasons brought, like we said, you know, in the springtime and summer, lots and lots of sugars in the
form
of honey and fruits.
And honey, okay.
Right, and so those triggered fat storage.
Which we needed.
Which we needed.
At that time, because of the winter, you're saying, right?
Right, yeah, to go into wintertime, those extra fat stores, our bodies have developed a threefold insurance policy for survival during tough times. One, we process carbohydrates. That's the very first and best energy source for our bodies, and that comes in the form of sugars and also in carbohydrates in other foods. So things like potato and pasta, you know, those all have those carbohydrates, that energy source. We store a little bit of carbohydrates for about 24 hours, and then the excess gets basically stored as fat also.
Stored as fat.
And then the secondary is
yes,
the
she
fat
said
storage.
Carbohydrates then become stored as fat. Again, part of what insulin gets plays a role in.
Right.
Correct?
Yes.
And so we don't like that. All right.
Yeah, not in excess.
Not in the excess. Yeah, thousands of years ago when the winter was going to be very meager and we survived.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally different than what we have today.
Right. That fat storage helped us to make it through winter. And our bodies don't like to break down fat as much as they do carbohydrates, but that is what gets you through those tough times. And then the third being we can break down proteins in the form of your muscle tissue and other organ tissues, but it's really, really hard on the body. And the byproduct is a change in the pH of your blood. And so that actually starts to degrade the heart muscle and other important organ tissues. So our bodies did evolve to have these, you know, threefold kind of backups, and fat storage was going into the lean winter months and then the consumption of those sugars again in the spring and when all the animals come out, and the combination of sugars, carbohydrates, and fats helped humans to get this seasonal balance. And that's something else we've really destroyed, is the seasonality of foods. You know, we have no sense of season anymore.
Because we don't do it by season anymore.
We don't do anything by season.
Yeah.
We've got supermarkets that are stocked year-round with avocados from Brazil and Ecuador and you know, anything that you want.
So unfortunately, our bodies are drawn to those same cravings.
Right.
For the sweet.
Right.
And for that fat,
right.
and salt, which we haven't talked a whole lot about today, but saltiness, and the detriment is that we keep doing it, and the fat that we acquire, we don't have a lean winter or a winter when we're not going to be able to eat much, and use on that stored fat. That doesn't happen anymore.
It doesn't. And if you think
the fat stays.
It stays. Sorry. And it's okay. With American culture and cultural traditions, what's going to start happening in the winter? What's happening next weekend? Halloween.
Oh.
We go Halloween, and then we go our next food holiday, which is Thanksgiving, and then we go Christmas, and then we go New Year's.
Are we talking food?
And then Valentine's Day.
Right? That's not lean. Nothing that you've said means lean.
That's five holidays that our marketing and food companies have created into these food holidays, and a lot of it's based around sugars.
Oh, funny that you would bring up the marketing and food companies, you know, companies that produce the foods that we buy on the shelves that get marketed to us. They take it, but those companies, I'm sorry, I'm talking bad about them. They take advantage of these cravings to our detriment and our children's detriment.
They're pushing evolutionary buttons is a great way to put it.
Yeah. They're kind of using those evolutionary buttons in a way that's positive for their wealth, but negative for our health. And so that's why it's very, very good that you listeners are listening to this, so you can steer away from those products and into natural products that Melody Yeager is going to talk more about, I think.
Yeah, sure. And mostly even not products, but just produce.
Produce, non
packaged
and what's the word I'm looking for?
Processed.
Mm-hmm. Non-processed.
Right, yeah.
Foods.
Absolutely.
Whole foods.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I read an interesting study where there was an interview done with one of the communities who have been studied a lot recently, especially in the last two decades, are the Hadza of Tanzania. So Tanzania is in Southeast Africa, and the Hadza are traditional, what a lot of people would call hunter-gatherers.
Mm-hmm.
And they're one of a handful of communities who are still practicing very traditional techniques in their food acquisition. And they were asked, if you could live all year on honey and fresh meat, would you? And they laughed and slapped their knees and said, you think we're stupid? Of course we would. But that's not an option.
Yeah.
So it's not just us, you know, it's not just this gluttonous American thing that we're being sold. We don't have to accept that. It's a combination of our genetic predisposition to crave those foods and our brains trying to get us to survive really well. Well, we're doing fine survival-wise, so we have to override that.
Yeah,
and check ourselves and make different choices, which become habits and become norms, and then just become overall health.
Yeah, and that involves us thinking about what we're buying and consuming, using that as a major part of what we put into our decisions when it comes to the foods we buy and we eat,
right,
as opposed to just our taste buds. Wow. Well, great information. And, you know, you mentioned the word... I think you mentioned the word type 2 diabetes. At some point, we could go back to that, I suppose. But let me just throw out just this quick little blurb from where my brain goes. When we talk about those foods, cravings, and how we don't think about what we eat, we allow our taste buds to buy what those companies are putting on the shelf and enticing us because of those cravings that we developed thousands of years ago. The outcome, as you said, is fat production on our bodies, and the weight gain that comes with that brings type 2 diabetes, mm-hmm, largely. I mean, one of the major treatment for most cases of type 2 diabetes is weight loss, not medicines, weight loss. That's the treatment. And by weight loss, I mean slowly decrease in a healthy way, decreasing the fat on the body. That
right.
helps the glucose control. It's just the way it is.
Right.
So type 2 diabetes, we know it's been in a rise all across the world, especially this country.
Mm-hmm.
And what we've talked about as far as our food cravings and eating with our taste buds and the companies that produce those products and put them on the shelves, instead of using our brains and thinking about what we're eating and making wise decisions
right.
with our food and our activity, would help us immensely and will help you
right.
immensely relative to decreasing your blood sugar control problems if you have type 2 diabetes, and hopefully decreasing the likelihood for acquiring type 2 diabetes in your life.
Right, yeah, and I think that, you know, I'm going to be really cliche here and say knowledge is power. And it's empowering to know what's happening with your body. And one of the things I tell my students that I think is empowering for them, because they're in this kind of in-between state of life, you know, and they don't feel really powerful. They're still students, you know, but they're becoming adults. And I tell them to vote with their dollars.
Yeah.
And they get to vote. They get to tell these stores, these companies, or farmers markets, the types of things they want to buy with
mm-hmm.
their money. And if you're not buying it, those shelves will not be restocked with those items.
Yeah.
And that is very empowering. And it's
empowering
for the single mom who's struggling to feed her kids, you know, whether it's just time or finances or both. You know, it's empowering for parents with multiple children who you're trying to meet all of their needs and then their preferences and counteract all of the marketing and all of the outside influences that are feeding and kind of rewiring their little brains that are developing. And these are difficult decisions, but if you know what you're doing and what your choices are doing to your body, which most of us don't, and this has been, I agree, by design of a lot of these marketing you know, programs and thrusts is to make sure we don't know because, you know, sit back, relax, let X company take care of your meal. And that, as a working mother of three, is very tempting.
Yeah.
You know, to just let this company take care of my family's meal. But you have to fight against that right now in this stage that we're in. And I'm hopeful that we're on a path to making whole foods and unpackaged foods and unprocessed foods more of a norm and more accessible to all of us.
Yeah. It takes a little more work. It takes some brain power, thinking, and teaching our children.
Right.
And never giving up on that. No matter how tough it is, I think about my two boys and growing up as they grew up and never giving up on that, even though they wanted the things that taste, you know, that tantalize those taste buds and the companies.
Daily
that, battle. Oh, yeah. But never giving up. Never giving up. And teaching, it's what we parents do.
Yeah.
And that's right. You know, I just had a little smart aleck thought here. Am I a smart aleck? Maybe. I was thinking, and if from the money standpoint, let's say companies that make processed food and attract us, and let's take sodas for a company. Let's say some of the high fructose corn syrup sodas and sugar sodas. If you really feel sorry for those companies or you want to help those companies, it's fine to send them money. You can send them money, don't buy their sodas, because that's bad for your health. But if you really want to do them, if you really care that much about those companies, you can send them money. It's like the tobacco companies. If you really care about them, go ahead and send the tobacco companies money. I'm being a smart aleck. But don't buy the cigarettes and don't smoke them because that's bad for your health.
Right. And I mean, we can get to kind of a recommendations section at the end of this. But I mean, really, if any of your listeners are going, but change is so hard, you know, it's incremental. It's a tiny, tiny step. And it's something like, just give up soda.
Yeah.
You know, and some of you might be going, what are you saying? And wanting to shut off the radio. But by just taking a tiny step or placing, not changing what you are making, except for adding one more vegetable to your plate. Uh-huh. Don't give anything up yet. Don't deprive, because those are set up for failure. Deprivation types of diets.
What a great point you're making with that.
Just add a little in. Add a second vegetable or a first vegetable if you've got just starches and proteins.
Yeah.
You know, throw on a vegetable and just see what it does. It'll brighten up and enliven your plate. It'll change your palate. Your children will probably try to spit it out the first time. We do something in our house that a friend recommended to me. It's called the thank you bite.
Oh.
And you take a bite of everything because that's your show of appreciation for the cook. And over time, their palate will start to adjust and will start to get used to. And you know, my biggest success as a parent, I still think, is when my kids were fighting over the last few Brussels sprouts once. And I sat there and I went,
score,
I won. This battle. I
really like your point, and I think that's something to reiterate because it makes total sense, is little steps in changing to non-processed foods. Little steps, especially with the kids and for ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
Little steps and not give up. Keep going with the little steps, and then expand on that as time goes on,
right,
as opposed to making a big changeover. That's not a, like you said, that'll burn people out.
Absolutely. And deprivation, it just doesn't work. I mean, in the short term, it will, but you have to go back to a more viable, sustainable lifestyle eventually. And just adding even little tiny bits of fruit or vegetable to your plate. That was another kind of, I acquiesce with my kids and I'll do a fruit instead of a vegetable sometimes, because that's still a whole food. It's got fiber. It's got the carbohydrates that your microbes need. But we've found that I haven't done the research myself. Microbiome researchers have found that tiny little steps over 1-2 days and then 10 days can feed these beneficial bacteria in your guts that have incredible health side effects that I'm hoping that we get to talk about today. Okay. So in our guts, most of our bacteria, most of the microbes that we talk about, the good ones, the ones that we absolutely need to survive.
So hear Melody Yeager say that. Say that again. The ones we need.
We need to survive. We are not sterile. The last time you were sterile was when you were in the womb. And that's the truth. And on the point of exiting the womb, actually the vaginal bacteria in a woman's vaginal canal acts as, I love this quote, a pioneer bacteria. And they go and they seed. They go in the eyes and the mouth and the nasal cavity, in the ears, down the throat, and into the guts of a baby in a vaginal birth scenario. And when they get into the guts, they start populating and colonizing the gut of a baby. And over time, over the first few years, that is the formation of what is called the microbiota. And that refers to a collection of species. And the microbiome, I'm going to use these interchangeably, that's pretty acceptable in this field. The microbiome is the genetic material, is specific to the genes. So I'll be speaking mostly of the microbiota, which is just the collection of species. Okay. So our guts get populated and colonized by these bacteria that we absolutely need to survive.
And by gut, she's referring to our gastrointestinal tract, you know, our stomach and intestines.
Correct.
Which could not function without bacteria.
No, absolutely could not. And the vast majority of them do live in our colon. And the reason for that is, in other species of mammals, the colon is where fermentation takes place. So, for example, gorillas are folivores. They eat foliage. They eat leaves all day long. But we can't break down cellulose. We don't have the ability, which is the molecule in leaves. And we can't break that down. They have these enormous colons that are just these big fermentation vats. And so when they send these...
Fermentation as in bacteria living and working.
Correct, yeah. The bacteria, right, fermenting and breaking down the leaves. And the byproducts of the breaking down of those leaves feed and serve all the purposes that they have, all of the amino acids and nutritionally everything that they need. We have very, very small colons comparatively, and that is likely because we've been cooking foods. For so long. So for close to a million years, we have been pre-digesting foods by cooking them. So when we cook, we soften, we make them more accessible to our digestive tracts. And then also, being omnivores, we eat a wide variety of foods.
Omnivore meaning?
All consuming.
Means meats and vegetables.
Meats, vegetables, products. Right. Grains, anything we find. We're these big foragers.
That'd be us.
That's us, right, quite literally. So as we cook foods and we eat a wide variety of foods, we, because of our taste buds and our cravings, are drawn toward those nutrient and calorie-dense foods.
Yeah.
So we don't need the colon to sit and deal with, you know, cellulose over long periods of time. We are just eating much, much more calorie dense foods that are having the nutrients and the vitamins and the minerals.
So we got by with a smaller colon than the gorillas.
Correct. A big, big, small intestine, but a very small colon, but still colonized by a lot of these bacteria.
Yeah.
So what's really fascinating here, and one of the take homes that I'm hoping that your listeners have, is that the byproduct, the natural byproduct of breaking down plant fibers, what our bodies do, kind of like how trees absorb CO2 and their byproduct is oxygen, we have this process where we break down fiber. The byproduct are these short chain fatty acids, which are really, really important in human health, and for many reasons, which I think we're going to get to in just a moment.
Melody Yeager, thank you so much. And Melody Yeager will be back with us in the second half of the program. Let's take a little music break. But before we take a little music break, let me give the phone-in phone number for you, the listener, to call in a pledge for this community radio station, the listener-supported, and that is 895-0131, 895-0131. Call in a pledge. You'll feel good about it. We're working on getting some music. You know, the second half of the show, we're going to talk more about... Melody is going to talk more about the bacteria and other organisms, so stay tuned.
took all my bread, ravaged my body, long messed with my head. I don't know, but I've had my fill. Call a doctor and tell him I'm ill.
Hello, this is Ken Logan and the Doctor's Inn. We're second part of the show here. Remember, this is Pledge Drive. You, too, could pledge to help support this 90.1 KZFR community-supported radio at 895-0131. Please do so. 895-0131 to help support your community radio station. Today we are talking with Melody Yeager. She's an anthropologist who teaches at Chico State University and Butte College. And we've been talking about the development of our cravings in food types over thousands and maybe a million years, and how that has led to how some of us eat, many of us eat, and what companies take advantage of relative to that in what they produce and put on the shelf and try to entice us to eat. And then Melody was then talking about, before we had break, about the bacterial, the bacteria of our gut, our intestines, and the importance of, the vast importance of those. And it's very interesting, and she's going to tell us more. She's going to educate us. I want to hear this.
Well, microbes are really important, and when I think about talking about them, we don't talk about our guts and about good bacteria.
Yeah.
You know, we Clorox
bacteria
every
are
surface,
bad.
And
bacteria get are bad.
Right.
I mean, I hear the, you know, I'd say 90% of us, we hear the word bacteria and we think,
ooh,
negative, negative.
Right, right. You want to kill 99.9% with the Clorox wipes or whatever.
Yeah.
It is, which we do use in my home. I'm not saying we don't.
Yeah, there
use
are
them,
pathologic no. bacteria which are not good.
Absolutely. But the bacteria
however,
in your gut help fight E. coli. You know, help fight the pathogens.
Bad guys.
That
help fight
are
the bad guys.
Those bad guys. Right. And they work with our immune systems. And one of the terms that I really love, there's a really, really great and interesting couple, the Sonnenbergs out of Stanford, and they have the Human Microbiome Laboratory. And they've written a fantastic book about gut health. I actually brought it with me. And it's very easy to read. And the reason they wrote it is in all of their really intensive, you know, research, all of their really, really deep academic research that they're doing and all the conferences they go to, they're seeing their colleagues make changes in their lives, and they were making changes in their lives. And
wow.
They made changes
for the positive.
For the positive. Well, for the aid in a flourishing and healthy microbiota system, you know,
oh, okay.
A good, healthy gut system.
Uh-huh.
And I'll tell you what that means in a minute.
Uh-huh. Changes to benefit
changes
that.
Changes to benefit that system. So they were seeing that it's this kind of elite academic community who's making these really healthy changes. And they went, wait a minute, everybody needs to know about this. So they wrote this really fantastic and very accessible book that tells you very, very plainly just how important these systems are. And basically what has been found found, the very, very first research was done, or the very first widespread testing was done in 1998. And basically, to test your microbes, your gut microbes, they test fecal matter because that's the best way to find out what's happening in your guts. And they tested a sample of 200 Americans, and they looked around and went, well, there's not a whole lot of variation here. They were really surprised. So they went and started testing populations on different continents, populations who got their foods in different ways. And they found that the more close to the food source a population is, the more variation they have in their microbiota. So what does that have to do with anything? You know, you have hunter-gatherers in Africa, like the Baka who live in the Congo region, and then their close neighbors, the Bantu, who are farmers, but traditional farmers. And then they tested the Baka microbiome, and then they tested the Bantu microbiome, and they compared that to their American studies. And what they found was the Baka, who live a very traditional foraging lifestyle, vegetables, a lot of manioc, which is a tuber. It's a really, really fibrous tuber. They eat a lot of fruits, and then wild game, which they catch in nets, they field dress, and they cook really close to the source. So they're getting a lot of the microbes in the dirt, which, you know, don't cringe. This is good stuff.
Mm-hmm.
From the air, you know, a lot of the microbes that are just present in the environment, they're getting with their meal. They tested those. They had the most diversity, and they tested those
diversity of their different microbes. Types of bacterial
correct.
Species.
Correct. Uh-huh. And they tested the Bantu farmers mm-hmm. who do traditional farming. They live really close to their mm-hmm. animals. They don't do a lot of sterilization. They don't mm-hmm. use pesticides, fungicides, herbicides, you know, mm-hmm. killing all the microbes in the soils.
Mm-hmm.
And they had similar mm-hmm. microbial makeup, but just a little bit less.
Mm-hmm.
And then compared to the American populations, we were lacking the diversity. Now, why does this matter? When we look at people who are clinically obese, when we do tests in labs with rats and mice and we make them clinically obese, what we see is that their microbiome is very, very small. The diversity is very, very low. And this is across the board correlation. There is no one who has become the kind of westernized processed food obese who has a diverse microbiota colony.
Hmm.
So this now catches the interest of American doctors and American researchers who want to know what is with this American suite of metabolic disorders and chronic diseases. These are not communicable diseases. We're not catching them from each other. This is not tuberculosis, but we're seeing obesity and type 2 diabetes going off the charts.
Almost like it's contagious.
Almost like it's contagious. So where is it coming from, and mm-hmm. how is it becoming so prevalent? And mm-hmm. food alone does mm-hmm. not appear to be the reason. It's one of the proximate causes. It results from something else, or it is compiled with something else. And mm-hmm. what is being seen now, and this is research that's literally unfolding by the moment, you know, and there are a lot of unanswered questions. But when we do this research and we correlate it with healthy populations versus unhealthy populations over and over and over again, if you test a healthy population next to a big sample of people with type 2 diabetes, a big sample of people with something like Crohn's disease or
which
colitis.
Is a bowel
which is
disease.
Yeah, these are inflammatory mm-hmm. bowel diseases mm-hmm. that once they start, we've started resorting to surgery to remove mm-hmm. part of a bowel that is so inflamed that can't mm-hmm. be stopped. Why are these Western diseases? And why, with the export of the Western or American lifestyle, are we seeing these start to pop up in some of these other nations?
Hmm.
And a big, big part of this is a reduction in the diversity of the bacteria in our guts. And then the second part of it, so that's basically the first thrust, is this reduction in diversity. And second, we're not properly feeding our microbes.
Hmm.
So Justin and Erica Sonnenberg, the Sonnenbergs who wrote the book that I love, that do the study at Stanford, they refer to this with their children as their pet. You have a pet living in your guts, and you need to feed it. And it's your responsibility to feed and care for it. And if you need to put it there, people, go ahead and use that, you know, comparison. Go ahead and use the pet analogy. So we can think about feeding this microbial community for a lot of really important reasons. One is as I mentioned right before the break, the byproduct of breaking down fibrous plant materials are these short-chain fatty acids. Short-chain fatty acids are released into your bloodstream and reduce inflammation. So, Dr. Logan, do you see problems with inflammation in your patients today?
Yes, common.
Common, everything
variety of,
from...
I mean, various areas of the body,
it's,
yeah.
It's almost systemic inflammation, so everything from heart disease...
Yeah, heart attack.
Arthritis,
yeah.
To high blood pressure, yeah. To problems with Alzheimer's and dementia, yeah. And multiple sclerosis, I'm getting excited, which is actually an autoimmune disease. These are all being connected back to a healthy microbial community in your guts.
Interesting. Wow. So, and what struck me was when you're talking about this research, microbiome or bacteriology, bacteria research, importance of such in our own guts, intestines, and how important that is for our health. 1998, you said, and that's just not very long ago.
It's not long ago. Agreed.
And like you said, it's still unfolding.
It's brand still... new research, but as we learn more and more, not just about these communities, but about our immune systems.
Yeah.
You know, we're learning that there are whole branches of the immune system that we never knew existed. There is an entire branch that is the mucosal lining of your intestines. And this mucosal lining is actually made of carbohydrates. So, when we don't feed our microbial bodies these fibrous carbohydrates by plants, they turn to consuming the mucosal lining, which is part of your immune system.
Mm-hmm.
And it keeps pathogens from crossing over into your intestines and becoming systemic in your body.
When they're intact, but we kind of break it down, it gets broken down if we don't feed our microbials
adequately.
If you're not eating
fiber, you're not feeding your microbes. And it's a huge issue. And all you have to do, eat plants.
Eat plants. Yeah.
Eat plants.
I'm just going to say,
Lori.
I just slipped in to say, if you don't feed your community radio station, that's all I'm going to say is call us.
Can we hear you? Are we hearing her okay?
I can hear.
895-0131. Give Megan and Ken a call. Melody, let them know that the doctor's in and that you're in and you're supporting your community radio station. And I think we want to thank Mike, who called early on in the show, to support and offer.
Why, thank you, Mike. Good for you calling in and supporting your community radio with a pledge.
The books are coming out now.
Oh, we're getting serious now.
Book nerds.
About this gut bacteria issue. We're going to hear more about it. Lori Niles, you're the captain, the pledge captain this hour?
I am the pledge captain.
Aye. And a great job you're doing. 895-0131.
You can always, if you are driving, you get home, you can jump online and you can pledge online as well. www.kzfr.org. We have the variety of programming. You're not going to hear this anywhere else. This is community radio at its best. So,
and your show is called
Two Penny Opera.
Try to find that elsewhere on the dial.
Yeah.
No way. Great show, Lori.
So please, one of give my us faves. A call. We appreciate people taking time out of their lives to come and share information with you. So share your support.
895-0131 to call in your pledge. Lori will jump to the phone. Thank you, Lori. So, Melody, tell us more about this bacteria subject, and I see you broke out the book. And what is the name of that book? Tell me the name of the authors again, you were saying.
The authors are Justin and Erica Sonnenberg, and they are researchers and instructors, I believe, also at Stanford University.
Stanford,
yes. And they've just started up a new research lab where they're doing microbial research. And this book is called The Good Gut.
The Good Gut.
The Good Gut.
Wow.
With
there
the
you go.
Subtitle of Taking Control of Your Weight, Your Mood, and Your Long-Term Health. And truly, they discuss this entire spectrum of how our microbial bodies, our microbiome, is interacting with every area of our bodies. And they even describe us as these composite organisms, that we have so many microbes and so much microbial DNA in our bodies that we have to recognize this kind of, not kind of, this major system that makes us who we are.
Yeah, makes us who we are.
Right. It's like a fingerprint.
Yeah.
Every person's microbial makeup is like their own fingerprint, and no two people have the same microbial makeup. So the way that you treat your microbes is going to either cause a flourishing of them or a diminishing of them. And what they describe is basically this extinction of certain species of bacteria in the Western world.
Which is not good.
Which is not good.
Not these bacteria.
No, and it's not to say, something that I find interesting about them is they don't say we should all have the same microbiome as the Hadza or the Baka or the Bantu. We should all have a microbiome that is adjusted to our environments. But because of the degradation of our foods through the highly processed foods, through the foods with all these additives in them, we are seeing a die-off of those beneficial microbes as well. And that is dangerous to our health.
Our team. They're part of our team.
They're part of our team.
And our teammates are dropping with these processed foods we
and they
eat
have
instead.
This really intensive connection, not just with your immune system, but also with that inflammatory response.
Yeah.
And they're kind of like puppeteers pulling the strings on your immune system.
It so makes sense to me. You know, especially with the auto, you know, you mentioned the word autoimmune. Why do we see more autoimmune diseases popping up? I do a lot of diabetes work in my practice. So, you know, type 1 diabetes, autoimmune condition, it's on the rise. You know, and I've always wondered, well, why is that? What's different now? And this is a potential answer right here. Our immune system works is working against us when we deprive it processed foods and plant products. Plant products are, tell us again, to help our gut lining and these bacteria. Did you say plant products?
Yes.
Unprocessed plant products?
Plant products. So long dietary fibers really is what we're talking about here. And the insoluble fibers, the ones that make it through your stomach acid, all the enzymes, your small intestine, and make it to the colon, that's the food for your microbiota. That's going to be feeding them. Yes.
There's more food for the community radio.
Yay.
Oh, thank you. Can I say their last names?
I think so.
Well we got we got Mike pledged. Sally, I'm going to say Sally's last name. Sally Logan. Ooh. That's my wife. Thank you, Sally Logan. And Marcia pledged as well. Thank you, pledgers. And the pledge phone number, thanks, Lori. The pledge phone number is 895-0131. That's 895-0131 to pledge support for your community radio. Without your pledging, without your help, we wouldn't have this community radio station. It's us. And you, the listener, are part of us. Thank you for pledging, and please do so. 895-0131. So, Melody Yeager, the information we were talking about is I'm just going to reiterate, I think we can't say it often enough, you know, and that's the plant, unprocessed plant products, including the fiber rich, especially when we're talking about the bacteria here in our
the
colon.
Dietary fibers are really important.
Dietary fibers are very important. I as a family physician pushed for high fiber eating for a long time, but you know what? Not for this reason. Now there's another reason, and this makes so much sense.
It does.
It makes so much sense relative to the to what we see relative to the inflammatory diseases that we see so much of, and we have. Let me tell you, when we see inflammatory diseases like some of the colon inflammatory problems, such as, and type 1 diabetes and rheumatoid arthritis and lupus and joint inflammations, et cetera, heart, coronary artery disease.
Being directly connected
exactly.
to the health of your microbiome and your microbiota, I should probably say more accurately.
It's another health information that's just good to know. It's so beneficial for us to know this. The information is cutting edge.
And it's all
Melody Yeager, cutting edge.
It's all stages of life. It's from birth
yeah.
through, you know, the kind of middle range, and then the aging period. They're looking at changing the way we age, the immunosenescence, that, you know, a period of time as the immune system breaks down as we get older. Mm-hmm. What if we could bolster that by mm-hmm. having a few more fibers in our diet?
Yeah.
And it's as easy as having something like yogurt and sliced banana, and not sugary yogurt, because that's that. What, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of people are looking for the probiotics right now.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have yogurt with something that we call a prebiotic, which is the dietary fibers, and bananas have those insoluble dietary fibers, if you have those together, you're implanting those bacteria in your guts and you're feeding them at the same time to make sure that you're not just doing the yogurt.
You're getting the bacteria and the fiber appropriate.
Right. And those are called synbiotics, S-Y-N biotics. And that's kind of the new phase.
Uh-huh.
But instead of having this magic bullet, you can just eat more whole foods and benefit your health overall. It's a no-brainer in
yeah.
some senses
yeah.
until it comes to making dinner at night. So preparation can really, really help, and very small incremental changes as well.
Tell us, give us a little information about preparation. Just what does that make you think of when you say preparation of those plant
you
products?
You know, having a few ingredients uh-huh. in your house, just staples, uh-huh. something like an onion,
uh-huh.
which has a whole lot of dietary fiber and a lot of flavor,
uh-huh.
some garlic,
uh-huh.
Olive oil, salt and pepper,
uh-huh.
right? And if you have just a few things that can flavor any
all
other meal,
those things you said, uh-huh.
right, then you can have, I've made a vow to start trying to cook things like eggplant, which I've never cooked with. But it's like, why not? You know, and so
yeah.
I put my normal seasonings on these foods that my family is unfamiliar with, but they taste like my cooking. So if you can just have a few flavors, you can really, really quickly cook up fresh foods and get them out to your family in those familiar ways.
Yeah, my wife did that with eggplant just the other day.
Oh.
It was excellent.
Right. And just, it can be simple.
Yeah.
You know, my sister introduced me to, and Costco's great for a lot of these products.
Uh-huh.
They have big packages of pre-peeled and sliced, because let's be honest, peeling and slicing up a butternut squash is dangerous.
Oh.
Right? It's hazardous to your health.
Hazardous to your fingers and hand.
Uh-huh. They have pre-diced, pre-packaged organic butternut squash that you can buy. Bring home and just get it on the stove with a couple of those flavors, whether you're frying it or steaming it, or not frying, but cooking, you know, sautéing.
Yeah.
That kind of preparation can
be. Or broiling it in the oven. What do you call that? Where you put it on a show?
Oh, yeah. Broil or bake or, yeah.
What do you call it?
Roasting.
Great for vegetables.
Yeah, my wife does that too, and they're excellent.
Wonderful. And mm-hmm. coconut oil, you know, in a mm-hmm. lot of these things. So having a little bit of preparation, as I said, a busy working mother of
yeah.
three and wife, having that at home saves me from stopping for the
yeah.
fast food.
You know, and I want to see what you think about this. Another way of getting fiber, fresh, processed vegetables and fruits is... what I do in the morning is grind them up.
Oh, yeah.
I put them in a blender.
Right.
Yeah, I make a smoothie.
Right.
Water is my source of fluid. And then that's what I do every morning.
Right, yeah.
A variety.
Coconut water, avocado. You can do, if you keep it at a 3-to-1 ratio, vegetables to fruit, you still end up with enough sweet, but it's not a big sugar bomb.
Yeah.
Right?
So
you're not going to be really, really hungry within an hour. So
I'm telling you, I don't get hungry until lunch.
Yeah, I do coconut water, avocado. I don't do any dairy in it. And then usually a blueberry or mango or pineapple, and then kale or spinach, you know, and add a few more vegetables on top. Celery, throw that in there. Cucumber.
Yeah.
You get your salad right first thing in the morning. But you
exactly.
Feel like
see, that's what I think of too. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of fresh vegetables right off the bat in the morning.
And you're feeding those microbes. You're
feeding
sending
those microbes.
All that your food down to help your body to deal with processing processing fats. It helps your liver. It helps brain function. It also is going to help keep you healthy and preserve your immune system. And as we all move into winter right now, we have to think about keeping our immune systems operating at their optimum place.
Good point. You know, and I'm just thinking about my lunch. You know, I just say to another, and it's to me, it's quick and easy. Just fresh vegetables, eating raw, and nuts.
Right.
You know,
nuts
almonds around here. I say almonds because I'm from Chico.
Mm-hmm.
Some people use other terminology, almonds or something. But
the L out of them, I think, is the saying.
Yeah. But almonds for taste and a little protein, and of course it's fat and some sugar in it. And then green beans, uncooked, carrots, peppers, and then what else do I add? That's about all I'm putting in it now. But and then I have a little soy thing,
right.
Like
yeah,
a soy dog too.
You're feeding.
And let me tell you, it's easy to do. It's very easy.
But that, as all things change,
that doesn't take time.
Change can be hard, and we want to just recognize that to change can
good point
be difficult.
Again.
But once you establish a new habit, it just becomes a way of life. And things like rheumatoid arthritis, they don't come out of nowhere. It's about a decade of leaving that microbial community left hanging, and then that's irreversible. So.
Little steps at a time, small changes in that, adding those fiber-rich fruits and vegetables to your diet. Excellent. And moving away from processed foods and being beneficial to our beneficial bacteria in our gut, which we absolutely need as part of our team. Wow. Thank you, Melody Yeager. Very informative. I so appreciate your help with us in understanding the this, how we've developed over these thousands and thousands of years, and how to get back some of the benefits in our health, such as with unprocessed fruits and vegetables.
Well, this has been a pleasure. So,
wow. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And thanks to Sandra for running the controls. And thanks to Lori for being the pledge captain out there. Remember the phone number to pledge to help support this community radio, 895-0131. The Dr. Zinn is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Chico Art Center's Open Studio Art Tour. 60 artists in Chico, Paradise, and Orville are opening their studios to the public. The opening reception is on October 21st, with tour dates October 22nd, 23rd, 29th, and 30th. And October 21st happens to be tomorrow. For the opening reception, I'm noticing. Tour guides are available at Chico Art Center and local galleries. Information at chicoartcenter.com. And by Dr. Michael Scholl, clinical psychologist offering psychotherapy for adults and play therapy for children. Dr. Scholl helps people find meaning and depth in their lives and deal with issues including depression, anxiety, trauma, and works with children as young as 5. Located in Chico, Dr. Scholl can be reached at 891-6292. Again, the